Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
The MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is presented by WinBet. Get started today and you'll get a risk-free bet of up to $500. Terms and conditions apply. Get the details at WynNBet.com and download the app today. We're also brought to you by Better Than Vegas. Better Than Vegas is your home for free daily video picks from the SGPN crew. It's like YouTube for sports betting. Make sure to subscribe to our profile at sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV. That's sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV. And finally, we're also brought to you by PicksWise. PicksWise has free picks every day for every sport. Check out all their expert plays and betting news at PicksWise.com. That's PicksWise.com.
And we're back in your disgusting degenerate ear holes. It's the MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. Welcome to episode 28, I believe. I'm Jeff Fox, your host. I'm a writer and editor over at the sportsgamblingpodcast.com website thingy. I also run the MMA-manifesto.com. I'm up here in beautiful, rainy Ontario, where we're locked down again for a month. For those concerned about me, I did survive my wife's haircut, and I'm as handsome as ever, so no concerns. I know there's a lot of hand-wringing and consternation online about this, but I'm fine. And the beard's intact, so all is well. I shouldn't say I am fine, because myself and my co-host actually have are ailing right now. We have this this illness called a heater, which we're on a really rough heater right now, and I don't know what the cure is. It's definitely not more cowbell, but we're definitely on a heater, but I'm sure we'll talk about plenty of that soon. Let's introduce that aforementioned co-host. That would be Daniel Gumby Vreeland, the host of Top Turtle MMA Podcast and of the Prelim Picker. And, my fellow man on a heater, sufferer, whatever. Hi, Dan.
Hey, what's up, man?
So we're struggling on this heater. We both went 10-3 last week. It's pretty rough, eh?
Yeah. Just real quickly, before we break down completely 10-3, 10-3, do you usually give me the money amounts too? Do you not like,
yeah,
did somebody do better than the other person at 10-3?
Maybe. Let me open my spreadsheet, Dan, and we'll see. I think you all can guess who made more money than the other person. The associate co-host made more money than the actual host. All right, so we're talking, of course, about UFC on ABC2, UFC Vegas 23, UFC Fight Night, Vettori versus Holland. It's all the same event, people, just a bunch of different names. Yes, I went 10-3. I bet $100 in every fight, of course, like I always do. So I made $320. Dan went 10-3 also. He bet $100 in every fight also because he's a degenerate, and he's up $406, almost $407. because he hit a couple of juicy underdogs, which we will discuss. We both hit one juicy one, but he hit a second one, which put him over the top for me.
Did I not hit three?
Let me see. You did have three. You had an even money one, too. That's correct. That's correct.
Oh, because Mackenzie Dern wound up coming in even money. Right.
Yes.
Yeah. I think I had seen her at plus – well, I mean, I guess that's plus 100. But I had seen her at, bigger plus numbers. I think the broadcast had her plus 110. But, yeah, still an underdog.
Yes, without question. So, speaking of the scorching red-hot heaters, I am 32-11 over the past, three events? That's a 74% hit rate, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm up $1,010. That's like about 24% return on investment. How's that? But if you think that's impressive, listen to Dan's run he's on. 42-16, 72%, which is not bad, but it's a little worse than me, but it's longer. It's more stretched out, so he made more money. He made $1,500. That's 26% return on investment. That is impressive.
We can't miss lately. It's almost like we knew all of this stuff already, and it was a bad streak. This isn't a good streak. This is what we normally do.
Exactly.
The streak before was a bad streak.
It definitely was, because our yearly totals still aren't that great. I'm 72-59, so I'm up to 55%. I want to be at least 60, so I'm getting there. But I'm still down like $2,100, so that is rough. Dan is finally over 500. If we had sound effects, I'd play some kind of sound effect right now. He's 68-63, 52%. He's down $1,900, so he's beating me in the money too there.
Was that because of the plus 275 underdog I hit?
Yeah, 3 weeks ago, yes, or 4 weeks ago, yes, Dan. He's still living off that. And as for locks, I am still a perfect 5-0 on my lock picks. I hit it last weekend also. I'm up $300 on the locks, 61% return on investment. Dan actually hit his lock last week, which brings him to 2-3. He's down $170, which is obviously a negative return on investment. So anyhow, things are trending in the right direction, that's for sure. We still have a ways to go, but betting on every fight can be a volatile experience, but like Dan said, I think things are the way that they were supposed to be all along now.
Yeah, I think so too. And we're like, you know, we mentioned at the beginning of the year, one of the really wild things is that there was just this like insanely high number of underdogs winning. I think at one point it was like 52% of underdogs were winning, which like they shouldn't be underdogs then, right? Like if more than half of them are winning, it should be almost the other way around. But I think we're a little bit more regressed to the mean, right? Like if we look this past week, was there 1, 2, 3? I'm seeing 3 underdogs on the whole card hit.
So let's see. Yeah,
Arnold Allen, Mackenzie Dern.
Yep.
Mackenzie Dern and John McDessie. And Georgie's Dono, too. Yeah, Georgie's Dono.
We don't want to talk about him.
Yeah, that was a wild. We'll get to that eventually. But what a wild thing for a dude on a 5-year layoff to come into.
So four out of 13 hit, which is basically right around where I believe I said on the preview that you should be looking for 4 to 5 underdogs tops, and you know that's what the numbers are bearing out, and that's around 31% underdogs hit. So that's right around where the stats are for the past 2 years. It's right around 33% or so. So yeah, things have regressed or reverted to the mean. Unfortunately, our bank accounts haven't yet. Because we got quite a big hole, Doug. If we could have just hit some of those insane underdogs to start off the year, we'd be better off. But slowly but surely, we're digging our way back out.
Yeah, I think so too. And like I said, we're digging ourselves out with, you know, in any gambling situation, when you're trying to figure out how to make money, it's just about doing the right thing constantly, and it will eventually shake out. Because like, you know, if you just follow the hot trend that, like, every single, you know, like if we look back at those first three cards, we just bet every single underdog, right? And we would have made tons of money. But if you keep that up over a sustained period of time, like, this card would have buried you. So, yeah, just making sure you do the right things.
Exactly. Do the right things. Such as, we'll do a segue right into an ad read talking about doing the right things. Let's talk about our good friends at WynnBET. doing the right thing would be going over to WynnBET because they're bringing you the action of real sports betting with the Wynn Las Vegas experience. Get in on all your favorite teams, players, and sports games. Generous promos, odds, and parlays are happening right now at WynnBET. Get started today and you'll receive a special offer of up to $500 risk-free sports bet. Terms and conditions apply. Get the details at WYNNBET.com and download the app today so you can see what kind of odds they have on my Phoenix Suns, who are unstoppable juggernaut. So, all right, let's break down the card. We'll start off right off the top. See what they did to our poor little boy, Kevin Holland. These people online and have ruined our fun, happy go lucky fighter. And he barely even talked last night. And the results were the same. He got wrestled for five rounds and got beat, but there was no joy in that fight whatsoever. The angry Italian man smothered him, and Kevin Holland had nothing fun to say.
Yeah, well, and I would say you're right. They did, you know, clearly the people pointing out that him talking, and I think probably Dana White did it more than trolls online, but like
people
who pointed out him talking during a fight is a bad loss is not a good look, right? Like, it's not a good look at all. So I think that did go away. But I will say, too, good came from that in that he seemed like when he got taken down, he was not complicit to just be on the ground from then on. Right? Like, he did something. He got up a bunch of times. Like, Vettori took him down 11 times in five rounds, which means he had to have gotten up at least six times. Right? Like, and I don't remember how many rounds he ended on the bottom. But, like, in order for him to get taken down 11 times, he can only end the round down five times. That means he got up six. So, you know, like, that's a good sign. I will also say, you know, like, clearly Marvin Vettori thinks he deserves a title shot. He's thought that for a while. He's thought that since before the Hermanson fight, for that matter. And I just have this feeling that after this fight, did this do anything for you, for Marvin Vettori? Because in my opinion, it just sold me on the fact that Israel Adesanya right now would wreck him. He would hurt him bad. Because he wasn't able to hold down Kevin Holland. There's an alarm. When it was on the feet, Kevin Holland pieced him up, including in the fifth round, making him look like a little wobbly before he got that takedown.
Yeah, he was using his reach.
Yeah, so like, if you're having trouble with Kevin Holland's boxing, struggling for takedowns a little bit, and struggling to hold him down, what in the world would make Dana White go, man, do we need to get him in there with Israel Adesanya, the guy who, like, does all of the things Kevin Holland does, but way better, right? Like, he uses his reach, he gets up when he's taken down, with the exception of the Jan Blankovic fight, which was a little harder for him, but he gets up when he's taken down, and he makes it hard for you to get on the inside. Like, man, I just think, you know, Marvin Vettori took a risk in fighting Kevin Holland, a guy ranked much lower than him when he was supposed to fight Darren Till. He wanted to stay active. You got to give him credit for that. But, man, I actually think he did more damage to his stock here than he did good.
Yeah, I think I'd have to agree with that. And you're assuming Dana White cares about having competitive, fair matchups. I think more pressing concern is Marvin Vettori really isn't that much fun.
Yeah, and he's
that wasn't a fun fight, and he's a angry young man.
Yeah, well, you're right about the angry young man thing, but it's also in, you know, and I don't know if this is a cultural barrier, because I know he spent most of the time in the United States, but he is an Italian guy. I don't know if it's a cultural thing, but like, there are fighters who talk up fights and do the pre-fight weigh-ins and stuff with a sense of anger, but it, like, I feel like there's something about his that's, like, kind of off-putting, and I'm not quite sure what it is, but, like, you know, Colby Covington comes in every fight, and people get jacked up for his fights, right? I don't particularly like his brand of anger, but, like, he goes in angry, and people are, like, enthralled by it in either the love or hate way. This is almost, like, not only, like, a hate way, right? Like, they people clearly don't like the way that Marvin Vettori comes into fights, but, like, also in a way that, like, is not even, like, marketable dislike, and I don't know what that is, I don't know why that is, but it does seem not particularly a good sell, which is too bad, too, because, like, he comes from a country that doesn't have a lot of MMA fighters that are, you know, have reached the highest level at the very least. that could be an inlet for the UFC, and it just seems like, I don't know, there's something about it that the common fan does not enjoy.
Plus, the fighting style, a ground and pound, is not usually a fan favorite style, and he's not a finisher. He's got two knockouts in his career. He has what, half of his wins have come via submission, but if you look at his UFC record, he's got two submission wins. That's the only finishes he has over, what, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 fights.
Yeah.
So it's not like he's not fireworks inside or outside of the cage. So
The ground and pound, too, is just like it's there, but it's not particularly vicious. I know they hyped up the swollen eye, Holland, and hey, he might not have been able to see because they asked him if he could see out of that eye, and he said, "I can see you," which doesn't answer that question at all.
Right.
Which, yes, I thought was pretty funny. But like, I mean, they hype that up, but it's not like a particularly vicious style. You know, like when Habib's on top of somebody, he creates space and throws, and like, Vittori's kind of throwing frequently enough that seems interesting, but like, it doesn't seem particularly impactful. You know, he did land one elbow there that seemed to get Holland, but yeah, I don't know what it is, but again, you know, a 50-44 and not a particularly exciting one.
Yeah, looks like I think he's got a ground and pound stoppage in his career, and that's basically his style. So like you said, it's not one finish out of 22 fights when your main style is take guy down, ground it out. It's not going to win you a whole bunch of fans, especially if you have a prickly attitude. So I think we're pretty much talking ourselves out of him being a title contender. I'm looking at the performance rankings I run on MMA-manifesto.com. He's in fourth, but he remains in fourth. This basically hasn't moved him at all in the rankings as of this point. We got Adesanya way out in front, and then I've got Derek Brunson, Robert Whittaker, and Marvin Vittori. All those three are basically grouped within just like 20 points between the three of them. So, and then there's another huge gap after that. So this is probably good news for this coming weekend's fighters, Robert Whittaker, and maybe not so much Kelvin Gastelum, but you think Whittaker probably has the inside track to the next title fight if he's able to get past Gastelum this coming Saturday.
I agree with that. And here's the thing I'll say, too, is that, like, the other problem Vittori has is that it's a rematch, right? Like,
right.
He's not even the fresh face, you know what I mean? Like, if he was the fresh face and the person we could say is an unknown commodity for fighting Israel Adesanya, we could, and granted, it's more unknown because it was a while ago, but if we were saying that, like, you could sell him over Paulo Costa, who's already fought him, or Robert Whittaker, who's already fought him, or Derek Brunson, who's already fought him, but all four of them have already fought him. So, like,
right,
you know, who looked better in their fights against Kevin Holland, Derek Brunson or Marvin Vittori? I think the answer is pretty quick and easy to answer, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Derek Brunson looked way better than Marvin Vittori, so in what world do you step back and say, Marvin Vittori probably deserves this title shot over Derek Brunson? I don't think you can.
No. Yeah, so I guess Derek Brunson's got to be hoping for a Gastelum win next weekend, or Whittaker not to look good or not to be ready to fight whenever it's time for Izzy to get back in the cage.
Yeah, I think that's his only path. Because really, I think and either of those two, Derek Brunson or Marvin Vittori, in all actuality, probably have to fight Paulo Costa. Like, I think the both of them should be clamoring to try to get their hands on Paulo Costa as quickly as possible, because I think that's the path.
Right.
Because ultimately, you know, and I don't mean to spoil our Thursday preview, but, like, I don't expect Robert Whittaker to have a whole lot of trouble with Kelvin Gastelum. You know, like, Kelvin Gastelum, very good fighter. He's perhaps given the very best fight to Israel Adesanya, with the exception of Jan Blankovic. So, like, you know, we'll talk more about that later, but, like, I don't expect him to have problems. And I think, you know, the whole, you know, New Zealand, Australia, you know, conglomeration you have there between those two, it just sets up, like, a really nice fight. And, yeah, Izzy won the first fight, but again, We've got a whole bunch of people who Izzy's already beat. That's sort of the problem with the middleweight division right now.
Yeah, it's a shame that he can't fight at light heavyweight. This would all have been cleared up if he could have won the light heavyweight belt, and then they could have had him surrender the middleweight one, and all these other guys could have been in the running for a belt. But that's not the case. So what do you think's next for Vitória? You think it's probably like a Paulo Costa type fight, or Darren Till perhaps? Maybe Darren Till, since they seem to still hate each other.
Yeah, I think the only problem with the Darren Till fight is Till's going to be out a while, right? Like, your broken collarbone doesn't just heal real fast. And in addition to that, like, if you come back on a broken collarbone, those do tend to break pretty quickly again if they're not fully healed. So I actually think between Darren Till and Paulo Costa both having these, like, ambiguous injuries that will see them both on the shelf for a while, I think logically you're going to see those two fight each other, like, down the road. Because either of them would be a good sell for a title fight. That could be a number one contender fight later. So I think what you're going to wind up seeing is Vittori versus Bronson. I think it's probably the only thing that makes sense. Both of them just manhandled Kevin Holland. Both of them present a style that the other one kind of hasn't seen in a while. So I think that would be fun, and it would answer a lot of questions. It would make a contender out of one of them. Because, like I said, unless Calvin Gastelum goes out there and absolutely stomps Whitaker or makes him look stupid in a win, I think it's got to be Whitaker next. Like, I don't think there's any other option. So, Vittori and Brunson need to make sure that they don't Colby Covington themselves and put themselves on a shelf stupidly for too long.
Or Leon Edwards, we can call that
or
also.
Yeah, Leon Edwards ourselves or whatever, yeah.
Exactly. Doesn't really look like, at least based on the MMA manifesto traffic, doesn't really look like this is a dimmed Kevin Holland's star too much. He's still the guy bringing in the most traffic from this past weekend for me, which is surprising. Maybe it shows you how Vittori really doesn't have any star power whatsoever behind him, at least at this point. We didn't really learn much on Kevin Holland's end there. He didn't, it's not like he had time to change his fight. He still struggles to stop takedowns. When he's on his feet, he looks like a world beater, but he can't stop takedowns. And it doesn't matter if he's a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, which they always bring up. He's not exactly subbing a whole bunch of people off of his back, and he's constantly on his back, it seems.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, last time we talked a little bit about the prospect of him going back to welterweight, right? Because he had fought at welterweight a bunch of times in the past. You know, like, I think it was probably, like, way back in, like, 2017 he had fought, like, at that weight. I think there's still a possibility that, like, going back there is probably the right move for him. And I don't know if he's bulked up. I know he's crazy skinny for even middleweight. But he's coming in 2 or 3 pounds light every single time. And I don't know if he does that for a reason or if he just doesn't cut much or, like, what's going on. If he can go down to welterweight, I think there's actually a lot of intriguing options on the edge of the top 15 for him there. Again, the top of the divisions in most of these divisions are going to be a nightmare for him because they're guys who can wrestle, you know, with the exception of middleweight, not being too many wrestler types up there. So, like, I think there are probably more intriguing matchups for him there, but, like, yeah, he's got to get somebody who will just strike with him to get him back on the right track.
Yep, without question, but I guess a more reserved performance from him probably did more for his reputation than losing the way he did to Brunson. Even though basically it was pretty much the same fight, he showed flashes of what he could do, but most of the time he was struggling on his back to get the guy grappling him off of him. So, not ready to write him off quite yet. He's hopefully he can get some fun fights coming up. All right, so that brings us to co-main event. Definitely don't want to write off either of these guys, two of the top young featherweight prospects in the world. And I got this one wrong. Dan, this is one of his underdogs he hit. He got Arnold Allen plus 112. He looked, both guys looked fairly good, but Allen clearly won 2 out of 3 rounds and rightfully got the decision. Surprisingly, it wasn't a split decision because there was a lot of interesting decisions, judge decisions last night, but he rightfully won 29-28 across the board. Looked good in his feet, better on his feet actually than I expected probably, and good in the ground. He basically looked good everywhere.
Yeah, I would say the thing that didn't surprise me about his striking is the defensive maneuvering. I think if you go back and listen to our breakdown of the fight too, you know, sort of the reason you were leaning to Yusuf is he got much better output. And he did in this fight, too. If you look at the stats on this fight, I think Yusuf wound up landing like three times more strikes than Arnold Allen, which might be surprising to somebody if you look at the judges' scorecards. But Arnold Allen made sure that every time that Sadiq Yusuf hit him, it was like a glancing blow that did nothing. He made Yusuf work for every single punch he threw. He made him miss a ton. And every time he hit Sadiq, it looked hard. So he just played stellar defense, which I think people underestimate how good that can be in MMA. But he played stellar defense. He made sure that when Yusuf hit him, it wasn't impactful. And then he put Yusuf on his butt twice. Once he hit him with a head kick that completely jelly-legged him and had him shooting for one of the weirdest-looking takedowns I've ever seen, where at one point I think his whole body was off the ground. Props to Allen for fighting just like the most perfect version of his fight that he possibly could.
Yeah, and looking at the strikes, yeah, it was almost basically three times, almost exactly three times the amount of strikes Yusuf landed over Allen. Yusuf was landed 79, and Allen landed 26. So you would, looking at that, and then looking at that, you'd think, well, obviously Yusuf won the fight. He was more, his significant strike percentage, 41% to 34%. He outstruck him more than double significant strikes, too, 47-21, but watching the fight, it was very clear that he didn't win. So you can't always look at stats and predict the winner that way. So looking at the rankings now, Allen, this is going to propel him up in my rankings, probably into the top 10 for sure. Looks like right now he brings him up to about 8th. So who would you like to see him fight next? He's right in the range of right now Ige, Ricky Simone, Calvin Kattar, Shane Burgos. He's right in that range. So he's probably, what, one or two fights away from a title fight, you think, if he can win them.
Yeah, I think, you know, while those numbers of where those guys are good, I actually think he's probably catapulted himself a little higher than some of those guys, right? Like, Shane Burgos is number 12 or 13 in the official UFC rankings, too,
right.
which, you know, he's not going to go down and fight somebody like Shane Burgos, especially because, like, isn't he on, like, a 150-fight win streak in the UFC now or something?
He's 8-0, yeah.
So I got to imagine that brings him pretty far up. The problem is like, there's not a lot of options in front of him. Dan Ige is scheduled to fight Korean Zombie, so, like, that's out. Josh Emmett seems to be on this really long injury run. I don't know if he's good again. Yair Rodriguez may or may not be on a USADA suspension. I have no idea what's going on with that.
I'm pretty sure he is, but we're not going to say, obviously. But Dana White danced around it, saying he's been suspended. Yeah, usually these things get announced or they get out, but no, we don't know for sure if he's on a suspension, but it appears that way because he doesn't seem to be injured or anything like that. So I think he's actually, I had a markdown as being eligible as of March the 8th, so he may be eligible again at this point.
Yeah, so like he would be kind of a fun fight. Yeah, you're Rodriguez for Arnold Allen to see what he could do. I actually would like to see him against somebody like Zabit, too. But Zabit is, again, another weird one in this division who's like, yeah, I'm just going to wait for my title shot. And for what? Because you just beat Calvin Kattar for 2 out of 3 rounds? How does that make you more deserving than Max Holloway, who beat Calvin Kattar to within an inch of his life? You know what I mean? Like, Zabit would have lost a 5-round main event. Instead, it was a weirdly 3-round main event that he won and would have lost rounds 4 and 5 by all accounts, right? So, like, you can keep waiting, dude, but, again, you're going to Colby Covington, Leon Edwards yourself. So, I mean, I guess that doesn't leave Arnold Allen with many options up there. Wait to see what shakes out. I guess if Calvin Kattar's brain heals a little bit faster than we expect, that wouldn't be an awful matchup for him either. Because, like, obviously Calvin Kattar's, you know, was seen as one of the better boxers before he got pieced up. That could be fun. I think a lot of these matchups are fun for him. It's just, like, nothing really seems, like, open and obvious for Arnold Allen at the moment.
No. And Yusef, you know, it didn't look bad in there. Put a good account for himself out there. And, you know, just the prospect loss, it just happened that he lost to another prospect. But I don't think this is diminishes his star too much. Maybe he can get an easier matchup next time in the cage and get on another winning streak. Because that was basically his only UFC loss. He was 4-0 heading into that. So he was on a nice little win streak himself. So it's only his second pro loss, and I think he'll be fine after this one.
I think he'll be fine, too. And the other thing about featherweight, too, is there's a lot of good options to get him right back on track, right? Like the edge of the top 15 is all undefeated guys like Bryce Mitchell and Movsar Evloev. And, you know, Ryan Hall should be in there but was dropped for inactivity faster than anybody's ever been dropped for inactivity, and has another fight booked immediately after that. So, like, you know, Yusef has got a lot of options like most of those guys. He's also got guys like he could fight Alex Caceres, right? Like, Alex Caceres is on, like, a 4-fight win streak, is probably just outside of the top 15, and is a little bit more of a favorable matchup than Arnold Allen. He's still got, like, some of that same defensive things built in like Arnold Allen does, but probably just, like, a lesser version of it. So, yeah, Yusuf's got lots of options. I'd like to see him against any of those guys I mentioned there.
There you go. Let's tell you about, before we move on, let's tell you about BetterThan.Vegas. How about BetterThan.Vegas is what I'm trying to say. It's like YouTube, but for what hashtag the Gens only care about, which would be sports betting, of course. Good people over at Sports Gambling Podcast are giving out free daily video picks over on our Better Than Vegas profile page. Better Than Vegas is always running a ton of free contests as well. They got a ton of free picks and handicappers to check out. So make sure you subscribe to our profile so you don't miss a pick over at sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV. That's sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV. And may as well, you can follow Top Turtle MMA too while you're on there if you want to see Dan. I think, did I give out winning picks last week?
I gave out two, if that's helpful. I told you that you should bet on Mackenzie Dern and Luis Aldana.
There you go.
Which are two people who won their respective fights.
I was 2-for-3 now, I think. But I have Vittori. I had Yusef, which was wrong. But then I had McDessie. So I got you, if you followed my advice, I got you a big fat +155. So there you go. Not too bad there. So anyhow, make sure you go over to BetterThan.Vegas. All right, so the third fight was a middleweight slugfest between Julian Marquez and Sam Alvey. The Cuban Missile Crisis versus Smiling Sam. And like I said, it was a slugfest until Marquez basically destroyed Alvey's brain and then put him in a submission until he went to sleep because Alvey wasn't going to tap out. So it says it was a submission victory, but it basically was a knockout slash TKO victory at that point.
Yeah, I think so too. Also, you know, you said he wouldn't tap out. I actually think if you go back and look, it looks like he tried to tap out before.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, which is kind of one of the more sadder ways that somebody goes out. But I was not, you know, going into this fight, not overly impressed with Julian Marquez because I thought his fight with Maki Pitolo didn't look particularly good. I don't know that I'm any more sold on him as, like, a guy at middleweight. You know what I mean? Like Sam Alvey has been on one of the worst runs the UFC has seen. And granted, some of those are split decisions that were kind of close or, you know, judges' scorecards that I'm not quite sure of or, you know, you can go back and look at MMA decisions and see there is some debate on some of those fights. But, like, this is, for results-wise, one of his worst runs. And, you know, for a guy who just counterpunches, you would have liked to see Marquez look a little bit better than that. And maybe, hey, he did what he did to get the win. But, yeah, I'm still not completely sold on where he stands at middleweight.
No, it was one of those fights. I'm like, do I really have to pick someone to win this one? Because neither of these guys are particularly good or inspiring. Fun to watch, I guess, if you like slugfest. So, yeah, Alvey is now 10-10 in the UFC, but half of those losses have come in his last five fights. He's lost five straight, and he makes a good chunk of coin. I know he's has that style that they like, and they did just actually he just got a new contract before this fight, I think, which is surprising on a 4-5 losing streak. So maybe that speaks to how much they like him. But and they did give him fight of the night bonus last night, which I think Dan wants to complain about. But yeah, he makes about 70 grand per fight, and another 70 if he wins. So I'm basically dancing around saying that this could be the end of Sam Alvey in the UFC, you'd think. Possibly,
yeah,
at least.
I think so, too. I will correct you real quick, though. That isn't a four-fight. He wasn't on a four-fight losing streak. You're missing the one draw he had in there Tao Jung, which is... he actually looked really great in that third round. I was really impressed with him in that fight, which maybe, hey, that's what got him one more. Yeah, I think it's unprecedented for him to have even gotten this fight, you know, with zero wins in his last five fights, let alone get a new contract. I mean, unless they negotiated that contract to be smaller, as his, like, you know, if you want to stay, you're going to have to fight for less, which, again, would be fairly unprecedented. But
you don't see that usually.
Yeah, but like you said, he does have a fan-friendly style. Maybe they do want to keep him around. It's hard to imagine he gets another fight here, but if he does, it's going to be against a newcomer. They're looking to build a name, you know, like a fun, striking newcomer who can come in and build a name off of him. And apart from that, I just... You know, I love Sam Alvey. I'm going to say that up front. I'm like a big Sam Alvey supporter. I've interviewed him a dozen times. He's like one of the nicest dudes on the whole planet. But like I said, it's unprecedented for him to have even gotten this shot at a sixth straight winless fight. So for him to get a seventh, it would be pretty shocking.
Yep. And I think in our post-production meeting, which was, about half a minute of us chatting before we went to air, I think you said you had a problem with some of the bonuses. Was this one of the ones you had an issue with?
There's no reason this wins Fight of the Night. How does John McDessie versus Ignacio Bahamondes does not win Fight of the Night? And I know Bahamondes missed weight by, three quarters of a pound or something right? Like, he didn't even miss by a pound. You want to not give it to him? Fine. Don't give it to him for missing weight by three quarters of a pound. How do you not give John McDessie a fat check for what he went in there and did to that poor child's face? Because he absolutely dismantled a dude with a kickboxing background, right? Like, Ignacio Bahamondes is got like a 20-fight kickboxing background. Not that McDessie doesn't as well. But he went in there and pieced him up and, like, hurt him bad a couple of times and, like, put on the fight that you talk about guys putting on. And then you turn around and hand it to Sam Alvey throwing, like, five counter strikes. And again, I love Sam Alvey. There's no way he gets that bonus over John McDessie.
Yeah, that fight really wasn't that good. But, yeah, let's talk more about the McDessie one. I thought we were in trouble at the start of that fight. I'm like, oh, we're not getting this this underdog pick coming through because McDessie was having issues with the range because Ignacio is just massive for lightweight. He's 6'3", I think they said, and he looks every bit of it, and got a very unusual style, constantly switching stances, and it looked like it took McDessie a little bit to figure out his range and how he's going to attack the youngster, but he did get it figured out, and he really laid it on him. But The Ignacio was not backing down. His face was definitely worse for wear by the time the fight was over. But that fight definitely was the fight of the night.
Yeah, I agree. Crazy that was a split decision. First of all, I will.
Oh yeah, okay, yes, that too. Yes,
you mentioned some wacky scorecard. That's a wacky scorecard. There's no way Ignacio Bahamondes won that fight. But I'll also say I think one of the reasons why I originally picked McDessie was what you just mentioned, is the guy has been in the UFC for a decade. And you don't just stick around in the UFC for a decade just because, like, you're all right. He's a great striker, and he picks up reads pretty well. Like, as the fight goes on, he figures you out. And sometimes that takes a little longer, and it's cost him fights in the past. But, like, not that Bahamondes is not, like, a nuanced striker. It doesn't have, like, a lot of things going for him. But it was pretty much just length that he was having trouble with. So, like, once he figured that out and got around it, it was his fight the whole time because he is a more technical, more experienced striker. So once he figured out the one sort of hiccup in Bahamondes' game, he just took it to him. And for that, you know, like, that's why I liked John McDessie in this fight and why I broke down why you take the plus 155 dog here. So, yeah, props to McDessie, and it's just too bad that he didn't walk out of there with a fat check, too.
Yeah, Baja Mondays did look good, though. Like, he's definitely got a future in this sport. He's at least fun to watch, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think I said, too, in the preview show that I wasn't 100% sold on him yet. This fight did more for me than, like, some other guys in wins on this card, right? Like, you know, I mentioned Marvin Vettori didn't move up very much in my stock. Julian Marquez didn't do much for me. I'd say Ignacio Bahamondes, I feel better about him. You know, like, there's more of a movement in a positive direction for him than most of those other guys we mentioned.
Right. And, yeah, looking at MMADecisions.com, all the media members had it for McDessie. Sean Sheehan of Severe MMA had it 30-26 for McDessie. Everybody else had it 30-27 or 29-28. Yet Derek Cleary, one of the officials, one of the judges of the event, had Baja Mondays win round two and round three.
Wild. Just freaking wild.
Yeah. McDessie outstruck Baja Mondays 43 to 35 in round two, 51% accuracy versus 32% accuracy. And then round three, he outstruck him 45 to 40, 54% to 33%. So he had the accuracy and the volume on his side. So how do you
get
those?
And the impact.
Yes.
That's the other thing that we're not, you know, you can't factor in with numbers. But, like, just, you know, his facial deconstruction aside, like, the punches that McDessie were landing were far more impactful, which, with the judging criteria, that's really what they weigh. So, you know, all aside from the numbers here, he deserved this fight in every sense of the word.
Exactly. And when one of your colleagues have it 30-27 for McDessie, how can you have it 29-28 for his opponent? That something doesn't add up there. But we had a – that wasn't a lone situation. That wasn't an anomaly last night. We had some interesting decisions. So let's jump back up to the main card. Mackenzie Dern got the biggest win of her career, I would say. In the mom fight, she took Nina – formerly Ni Ansarov, now Nina Nunes – took her down and worked an armbar until 12 seconds left. She finally secured it, and Nunes tapped out immediately. You don't want Mackenzie Dern withhold your arm. So she looked very good, and that's definitely her star is still bright, and she's still racing to the top.
Yeah, and you said she tapped out as quickly as she could. You can actually get freeze frames of that where it looks like her elbow is hyperextended. So she did tap quick, and it still didn't matter because Dern puts it on you like that. I was impressed with Dern. You know, like we said in the preview show that Mackenzie Dern is probably not that far from a title shot.
No.
You know, for what it's worth, you know, the UFC sees her as wildly marketable because of her, you know, Instagram, and because she's half Brazilian, half American, and because she's got this grappling pedigree where she comes from, you know, an amazing black belt father. Like, she's marketable. But in addition to that, I will just say the pieces of her game that I've always kind of doubted shown through is, like, massively improved in this fight, right? Like, her striking looked good. I thought she was beating Nunes in the striking until she took it down, which is another thing. She took her down, which I think not enough people realize about Mackenzie Dern is, historically, her takedown offense has been trash. Like, really, really bad. Like, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was, like, 5% coming into this fight. It was, like, 1 of 20. And that includes failing on takedowns against people like, you know, and no disrespect to the names I'm about to say, but, like, that includes a lot of failed takedowns against somebody like Ashley Yoder. And like, Ashley Yoder is a good grappler, but she shouldn't be able to stuff every takedown you throw at her. It includes a lot of, like, failed takedowns against, like, Amanda Bobby Cooper. And like, again, no disrespect to those names, but, like, if you can't take those women down, you're probably not an elite grappler in the UFC. So for her to have now changed that narrative and used a very nice takedown to get Nina Nunes down, right? Like, she got the single leg and she tripped the far side leg it was very slick, and then, you know, just dismantling on the ground the way we know she could. The dismantling on the ground like we knew she could is less impressive to me than the fact that those other two aspects of her game seem to be developing quite nice. And man, it's got to put her on a short list of people, you know, just behind Whaley and Rose for that title shot.
Yeah, without question. First off, Nina Nunes is a fun name to say, I have to say. I'm glad she's going by her married name. It's more fun to say than answer off. As for Duren, yeah, her takedown accuracy, it's up to a whopping 10% now.
With that takedown.
After going one for two last night. I think, was it Heavy Hands podcast maybe, but they were comparing Duren to saying that she was like Ronda Rousey with more heart and determination, basically more fight in her. Rousey didn't like being hit and didn't like losing well, and didn't particularly adapt or expand her game. While Duren basically is the opposite. This grappling whiz, marketable grappling whiz, but she's got a lot of dog in her. She's not afraid to get dirty in there, and she's basically improving all around. Which I have to say, I was down on her a few years ago because I didn't see what I wanted to see out of her. You know, she's bouncing around gyms and she was like not making weight properly. And then she ended up getting pregnant and having a baby. I thought, okay, well that could be the end of her as a prospect. But you know, I have to say, I'm very impressed. No weight issues. She looks like ripped, more ripped than she's ever been. And her game just seems to be getting better, improving every time she's stepping into the octagon.
Yeah, I think that change of gyms wound up being very good for her. And I know, like, a lot of people wrote her off after the Amanda Ribas fight, but I think that was, correct me if I'm wrong, was that right when she came back from having her kid?
I think so, yeah.
And like,
yes, it was, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, that's obviously not good. Plus, like, I'm pretty sure, and again, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, that was also right where she broke up with Black House MMA, right? And she was no longer with the team she's always been with. So, like, looking back, yeah, that loss did seem bad, and it seemed like, you know, she wasn't the prospect we wanted her to be. But, man, you said it, you know, like, physical body transformation, she looks ripped. You know, she very clearly has worked on the areas of her game that we were worried about. Like, man, yeah, she seems like the real deal now.
Yep. Looking at the rankings, in my rankings right at this point, she's behind Zhang, obviously, and Rose. Zhang and Rose basically are neck and neck at the top. They are head and shoulders above everyone else, and then drops way down. It's basically Marina Rodriguez and Duren are basically in a tie for third place. There's like half a point between them. And then Amanda Limos would be next, and then there's a big gap after that. So what are you thinking should be next for Duren? Or do you think like she's going to be like a fight night headliner type of fight, or do you have an actual opponent in mind for her, or what are you thinking?
So I think it would totally depend on who she fights, right? Like, yeah. I would love to see her, and some people will think this is too soon, I would love to see Duren versus Joanna Jędrzejczyk right now. I think that it would answer a lot of questions in a lot of people's books, right? Like, her striking look improved, her takedown is clearly there. It's not like Joanna has been infallible in defending takedowns, right? Like, you go back to those title fights with Claudia Gadelha, or both fights with Claudia Gadelha, and, like, Claudia got her down multiple times, right? Like, it looked like Claudia won rounds one and two of the rematch with takedowns and control. So, you know, can Joanna Jędrzejczyk stop a good grappler like Mackenzie Duren? Who knows? And the most dangerous thing about Duren is that if she gets you down once, it could be over, right? Like, that's the thing. It's like, she doesn't need much time to finish you. So, you know, that's a piece to think about. You know, it seems like that's probably not a fight that Joanna Jędrzejczyk would be all about. So, you know, you mentioned the names. Marina Rodriguez is up there. You got Yan Xiaonan is up there. Like, any of those types of people would work for me. Although I would say if she winds up fighting one of them, like Yan Xiaonan or Carla Esparza or somebody like that, I don't imagine that gets headliner status. You know, like, that just doesn't feel like that's going to headline a fight night. Yoani on J-Tech does, but the others don't really. So, and I'm not sure which suits are better. Like, does she need a five-round fight right now? Who knows? But ultimately, yeah, I think there are so many intriguing names up there for her, but I'd love to see her with Yoana.
Yeah, that's interesting pick for sure. Or if they just want to go for star power, give her Michelle Watterson. That would be an easy fight for her.
I think she'd toast Michelle Watterson. Exactly. I actually think Watterson versus Nina Nunes would actually be probably more competitive and more fun from like a stylistic standpoint. And again, they always book Michelle Watterson way over where I actually feel like she is, which no offense, again, to Michelle Watterson, but like, you know, she's super marketable, so she winds up kind of outkicking her coverage a little bit. So, but yeah, I think her versus Nina Nunes would be fun.
Yeah, and looking at traffic, I'm not really getting a lot of traffic for Dern, surprisingly. So maybe they have some more work to do, fully utilizing her her gifts and her potential star power. So hopefully, I'd like to see her get at least a couple more fights in before she's actually getting a title shot. So hopefully you can get her a couple of high profile fights on either top of cards or on high profile pay-per-view type undercards. So we can get some more eyeballs on her, because she definitely looks like has the makings of a future star in the sport. Daniel Rodriguez destroyed Mike Perry. I don't know. Not much else to say about that, really.
Other than let Perry go. Like, at this point, like, exactly, what is he still doing in the UFC? And I don't mean that just – first of all, I do mean that from the standpoint of, like, he clearly does not belong in a top professional sport based on the terrible things he says, the clear issues with mental health he's got going. Like, they either need to reach out and get this guy some help, or they need to cut the cord, because what they're doing of just, like, placating him and just letting him, you know, like, punch holes in sliding glass windows and bleed out on Instagram Live, that doesn't belong at the top level of any sport. So if you want to be considered a sport like all the other professional sports, maybe it's time to stop doing these types of things with Mike Perry. And that's, you know, without, you know, I haven't even mentioned, you know, homophobic and racist slurs, the fact that he fought a guy in Orlando, the fact that he punched an old man in a bar in Texas. Like, you know, like, take your pick. Like, the dude doesn't belong in a top-level sport for all those reasons. He's now 1-4 in his last five, too. Like, and looked utterly incompetent in striking against Daniel Rodriguez. I have a question for you about this fight, too, before we just completely throw Mike Perry under the bus and just call it a day, which would be fun and meaningful, but, like, did you, and maybe, I'm not sure how closely you were listening to the broadcast, the broadcast team seemed oddly pro-Mike Perry. Did it feel that way to you? Like, they were, like, singing his praises about how much better he looked and how much more serious it looked like he was taking things.
Yeah, there was a positive spin to it, it's true. I try not to pay too much attention at all to, no matter who's in the booth, because it's, you're not going to get much.
Yeah, but I thought he looked worse than ever. Like, that was one of his worst
performances. He
was a punching bag for Daniel Rodriguez. And don't get me wrong, Daniel Rodriguez is very good, but this is a guy who had a split decision with Vicente Luque. And if you go on MMA Decisions, like, may have won that fight with Vicente Luque. He didn't look good against Jeff Neal, beat Mickey Gall. We had a 3-fight span where he could have taken a fight with Vicente Luque and beat the hell out of Mickey Gall, and we're talking about him being a punching bag for D-Rod for 15 minutes, like a big punching bag for D-Rod for 15 minutes, and we're talking about how he looks like this new and improved guy, you know, amidst all of this other stuff happening outside of cage, almost outside of the cage stuff.
Yeah.
Like, he looked bad.
Yes. And it doesn't look good either when he basically has no one in his corner ever for the past few fights, or he has his young girlfriend, fiance, wife, whatever he wants to call her, baby mama, as his only coach, someone who has no experience coaching. He had someone else with him last night, right? It wasn't just her, I think.
Yeah, I think it was a training partner. So I guess, again, this is
that's an improvement.
The weird broadcast stuff is they were like, oh, yeah, he's linked up with a coach. But because of some conflicts, that coach decided not to come and corner him. So this is one of the guys he kind of trains with. And, like, again, like, you're singing his praises of having, like, changed his ways and figured out this team, and he looks so much better. First of all, he didn't look better. How much has his team figured out if he showed up with one cornerman? I mean, I guess, it's better than just his pregnant girlfriend, but, like, at the same time, it ain't good, right? Like, he doesn't have enough of a team behind him so that if his head coach has a conflict, he, in the UFC, can't have a full corner. Like, what is that?
Yeah, this is the top league, and it's on broadcast TV in the States, and you have this guy on your main card, opening your main card. Interesting choices. That's the sport we love, though. Sometimes we don't love it, but yeah, that's not much else to say about that. So buy Mike Perry. He makes a lot of money too, so he can hit the bricks for all I care. Let me tell you about one last sponsor, and then we'll rip through the prelims and call it a day. PicksWise.com, helmed by a team of trend-watching, data-devouring, sports fanatic wise guys, give you the who, how, and why behind every prediction on every game, every day, and every sport, all for free. NBA, MLB, and NHL, whatever the sport, they have you covered with free analysis and, more importantly, free picks. Plus, they have all the betting news you need and expert best bets. Head over to PicksWise.com for all the free picks you need. That's PicksWise.com. All right, we'll just rip through the prelims. Feel free to interrupt anytime you want to say something about one of these fights. Joe Selecki won a grappling fight over Jim Miller. Wasn't particularly exciting, at least in my eyes. He spent most of the time on the ground with really not a heck of a lot happening there, but it was still an impressive victory for the youngster. Makes him 3-0 in the UFC now.
Yeah, I like that he was basically able to control Jim Miller, because that's a hard thing in its own right. And
right.
Hey, like, he's a really great grappler, and for him to have even done that, it sort of shows that he's there. He's a guy now.
Yep. Matias Gamrot knocked out Scott Holtzman. Holtzman was basically swinging from his ankles like Vladimir Guerrero back in the day, wouldn't you say? He was like swinging at balls in the dirt, trying to take out Gamrot, but it was Gamrot who ended up knocking him out.
Yeah, and I think this is the Matthews Gamrot that everybody believed was going to be there, like, because his debut was not good. I think he won his debut. I actually think that was a bad judge's decision, but, like, everybody expected this kind of version of him, and, hey, he actually got it done in a way that not a lot of people saw with the KO here, because, you know, I'm a big fan of his wrestling. I thought his wrestling was going to be the difference maker here, but, I mean, once again, another guy that makes you feel like he's the real deal.
No doubt. We went through McDessey already. Then our hashtag chunky guy let us down, Jurgen DeCastro. And I want to say wild fight, but it was only wild for, like, a few seconds. The rest of it was them stalking each other. But, yeah, he got his lights put out very quickly by Georges Banho, the man mountain, who came off the bench after 5 years and took this DeCastro out, and probably took him out of the UFC, you think, possibly.
Another one who's kind of unfortunately on his way out, but I think you have to, because first of all, he just lost to a guy in a 5-year layoff, and second of all, the problem with him in his last two losses is he's looked complacent. He looks like, you know, he kind of looks a little bit like Sam Alvey, and look, it's like a big counterpunch or nothing. That's it. He's a big counterpunch or nothing. And in his debut, we got a lot of positive praise for him because the big counterpunch landed on Justin Taffa, no less. So, like, a big win. So, like, I think the praise got heaped on. He looked better in the Contender Series when he was ripping leg shots and like, doing everything he possibly could. The last three fights, the output has just been so bad. And I like the guy, too. He's another one like Sam Alvey I'm such a fan of. But getting knocked out by a guy in a 5-year layoff to make it 3 in a row for you while you seem to throw almost no punches at heavyweight while being a touted kickboxer, like, yeah, I can't see the UFC keeping him around at that point.
No, Dan and I are laying down the hatchet on a lot of people today on today's show. How many people? We fired quite a few people already. So
three, I
look
think.
Out. And yeah, look out.
It's way more than I like.
This is a fight worth mentioning. The bantamweight prospect fight, Jack Shore and Hunter Azur. We got this right, but barely, because this was another one of those split decisions, which made no sense. Two judges had Shore winning every round. One judge had Azur winning two rounds and Shore only winning one. So that's inexcusable.
Yeah, it was inexcusable. I will say the thing that baffled me a little bit about this one is I said the one thing that made me pick Luis Saldana as my my lock instead of Jack Shore was I was a little worried of the wrestling of Asia versus Shore because Shore's grappling is really good. I thought Shore would win in the stand-up, which I was right on that as well. But actually, Jack Shore's wrestling looked better than Hunter Asia's, right? Like, he took him down.
Oh,
he
took
his back. He looked good wrestling. So another guy who I think sort of cemented his place is, like, being a guy at the bantamweight division. So, you know, good on Jack Shore there. He stays undefeated.
Yeah, deep division, so hopefully he doesn't get pushed too much. But yeah, one judge had Azura winning the first two rounds. So
it's got to be because of the one takedown he had in those, right? Like, didn't he get one takedown and like no offense, like 6 seconds of top time? So like, yeah, I get it, but like that can't possibly win you a round when you got pieced up on the feet and controlled in some grappling exchanges in your own right.
Yeah, it was interesting, but. Yeah, when I heard it was split decision, I thought, oh, no, we're going to lose this one. We're going to get robbed. But no, we weren't, luckily. So that was my lock also, so I'm glad I hit that. And then Dan's lock was Luis Saldana, who won. Tough fight against Jordan Griffin. I was thinking we might be losing this one because Griffin was a dog in there, but Saldana ended up winning two rounds, 2-1. But it was a very, very close fight, if you ask me.
Yeah, I think it was a close fight as well, but, you know, like, a lot of people gave Jordan Griffin that first, and I just didn't see very much offense out of him in that round. Like, he did get the takedown, but, like, for me, Saldana pieced him up on the feet before that. The damage was clearly there, and, yeah, it was way closer than I would have liked being my lock. He's another guy who won, and I am a little bit lower on him despite him winning. I think he's got a lot of room to grow, whereas Bahamundes, who I was low on, lost, and I'm much higher on him.
Yeah, well, looks like this was a robbery, actually. Look, according to MMA decisions, only two of the media scores gave it to Saldana. Vast majority gave it to Griffin. So
I think a lot of that probably has to do with the commentary team. Because I was watching it the whole time, and granted, I had picked Saldana, so like I was leaning... you know, my rose-colored glasses on him.
Yes.
But, like, I kept thinking to myself, like, the judges couldn't have possibly scored that first round for Griffin, right? And the announcing team was like, well, Saldana needs a finish. And I'm like, does he, though? Like, I don't think he does. I think he's winning this fight. And then the judges read it all three for him, and I was like, okay, good, I'm not crazy. I wasn't seeing things wrong. But, like, you know, and I don't know who the media scores are, so I'm not going to badmouth any guys. But, like, I think inherently, if you don't go in feeling one way or the other, the announcing team can really skew the way that you're watching the fight.
Yeah, the announcing team doesn't seem to know how fighting works either or scoring works, which is interesting. So, and then fight that Dan got wrong, then I got right, light heavyweights, Jung beat William Knight, smoked William Knight, actually, 30-26, 30-26, 30-27. And I got that right, hooray. But Dan beat me on the night, but I won that battle at least. So, he was just so big compared to William Knight. It was striking how massive he was in there.
Well, and the other thing, too, is when we broke this one down, I picked Alonzo Menafield in all 35 times he was booked against William Knight.
Yeah.
As I said, Knight makes mistakes. Menafield's the type to capitalize on him. I don't know if Dalun Jung is. And not only is he, but William Knight walked into the same problem like 13 times, right? Like, lock, takedown, you know, like tie up, trip, tie up, trip, tie up, trip. And then it comes out in the second round, and the first thing he does is fucking tie up. And you're like, what are you doing? Like, he wasn't doing awful on the feet. Like, I still think he probably, had he not been zapped in the first and second rounds by, like, tying up and getting taken down and just struggling to get back to his feet, or using, like, some really weird get-up techniques that were Derek Lewis-esque. I think he probably stands a good chance on the feet if he just keeps his distance, but... yeah, William Knight is always going to be one of those prospects where I'm like, really great physical gifts, good power, some clear technique, and just is going to make mistakes enough that he won't get by the people who he needs to get by.
Yeah, the fight IQ definitely was not there. Definitely not last night. And then we started things off with a win. That's always nice. The Impa Kasangane tapped out Sasha Platnikov in the second round after he exhausted him, basically. He was totally gassed, it seemed, in the second round. So I think he beat him by exhaustion.
I think a little bit, too, but Platnikov was, like, bragging about his cardio going into this fight. And he did win his last fight pretty much just by, like, out-cardioing Luis Kosuke. So, which was never going to work against Impa Kasangane, because that dude is built like a freaking house. Although he did come down in weight in this one, so I guess maybe there could have been some concerns there. But yeah, he looked great. I also think it was, you know, wild that he got a submission finish, because we mentioned this fight probably was going to go the distance, because neither guy is particularly a great finisher. But Impa went in there clearly with a plan, and I think the reason we saw a great increase in his wrestling and his submission is he's working at Sanford MMA now, and just, like, you can see the difference. And, you know, that's no knock to Jim O and Jeff Jim O, the coach of Jim O. But, like, you know, like, there's a reason they told him to go get more training partners at Sanford MMA, gave him their blessings, is because, like, with all of that, the dude looks dangerous.
Yep, without question. So that puts a bow on that event, another successful event for us, and we'll try to keep it going this coming weekend, which is UFC on ESPN, Whitaker versus Gastelum. So we got Robert Whitaker versus Calvin Gastelum. Other fights, no, Jeremy Stevens versus Dracar Close. Dan's boyfriend, Andre Arlovsky, is coming down on short notice against Chase Sherman. It's a pretty decent card. Yeah, a lot of, like, we got veterans, Ricardo Ramos versus Bill Algio. So, yeah, it's a decent fight card for sure.
There is a very fun chunky guy matchup.
Oh, yeah,
on
I see that.
Too. Yeah.
Alexander Romanov. And
Alexander Romanov is perhaps my favorite of the hashtag chunky guys. He is like a chunky guy for all chunky guy lovers out there. So, fighting Juan Espino, who's maybe not all that chunky. He's at least thick, but in a fight where it is two very talented heavyweight grapplers in a what is going to be, it should be so fun to watch.
We got that to look forward to, guys. We got that hashtag chunky guys coming up. So in the meantime, you'll get that in your ears Wednesday night / Thursday morning. In the meantime, make sure you check out all our stuff at sportsgamblingpodcast.com. Check out the MMA-manifesto.com. I will be posting the pick'em contest for Whitaker versus Gastelum. You can win a $50 gift card to anywhere you want, courtesy of our good friends at Sports Gambling Podcast. So check that out. And make sure you check out Dan's podcast, Prelim Picker and Top Turtle MMA. Who's on Top Turtle this week? Or is it a surprise?
I am going to be talking to Lupita Godinez, who's fighting Jessica Penne on short notice, as well as I'm getting a little Bellator action this week, too. I'm going to be talking with a fighter with I think it's a yet-to-be-announced Bellator fight, but he will be fighting on the Friday of the week. This is hitting your ears as well, so it will at least be announced by Tuesday, hopefully.
Okay, and Lupita Godinez is a fun name to say also. So that,
yeah, she goes by her nickname Loopy often too. So Loopy Godinez, it's fun to say, and she is even more fun to watch too. So
yeah, there actually are quite a lot of names, fun names for us to butcher on this card coming up. So that'd be, or at least it seems like you've gotten quite good at these names, and I'm the one now that's tripping over all of them. So I think you've been practicing behind my back.
Yeah, I especially since I had to talk to Lupita Godinez, you got to make sure you say that one right when you talk to him, because it's terrible when you butcher it for 10 straight minutes and then they tell you after the interview, which of course never sounds good. But there's a fair couple on here that you could slaughter pretty hard, so I look forward to listening to you do that.
I will.
Going to give you credit real quick too, because you tripped over it when we did the preview show, but just now you nailed Impa Kasangane.
Yeah, I was gonna make it a joke and say it wrong, but I decided to show off and say it properly. So there you go. Take that, haters. And make sure you can check us out on Twitter. Speaking of haters, Jeff Fox, writer and Gumby Vreeland. And that'll do it for this episode. Thank you for listening. Oh, I almost forgot. Make sure you follow, if you're listening to this on the regular Sports Gambling Podcast feed, make sure you find our dedicated feed just for this podcast, MMA Gambling Podcast, and make sure you subscribe to that. That just kicked off with last week's podcast. So make sure you you subscribe to that so you don't miss an episode, because we won't always be on the main feed. They're going to take off the training wheels eventually and let us go out on our own. So make sure you do subscribe to the regular channel. And we didn't talk about quickly any hashtag hot takes on the new Venom apparel. I think they're fine. They're nothing special, nothing real different than Reebok, really.
Yeah, I saw no different. And I would also say, and I think, I can't remember if I said this to you last time or one of my other co-hosts, but I couldn't care less. I just would rather some of that money be going a little bit more dedicatedly to the fighters. They gave him a raise on the Reebok deal that was like literally pennies. So that's kind of disappointing. I don't really give a crap what they look like. I don't care if they're personalized or not personalized. I don't watch it for the shorts. So I'd just like to see fighters get paid.
Yeah, he watches it for the hashtag chunky guys.
Pretty much.
Let's not forget. So.
And you don't want to hide those in shorts.
No, exactly not. So, all right. So, let's put this one to bed. I will end it as I always do with these special words. Goodbye.